A lot of people are taking, a lot of frontline workers are taking hydroxychloroquine. So I'm taking the two, the zinc and the hydroxy. And all I can tell you is, so far I seem to be okay.
Totoo yung sinabi ko, alcohol. Pag walang alcohol available, hindi ka naman pwede, lalo na mahirap. Pagpunta ka lang dyan sa gasoline station, pagkatapos na bilang magpatulo na, that's disinfectant.
What do U.S. President Donald Trump, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, and Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte have in common? They're all populist leaders, and all three of them are in charge of countries that have lost control of their COVID-19 outbreaks. The U.S. is the country with the highest number of cases, at over 5 million. Brazil is in second place, with more than 3 million cases. The Philippines has much less, some 150,000 cases. But it's the highest in Southeast Asia. Trump, Bolsonaro, and Duterte exemplify what two Filipino researchers call medical populism. Could their similar leadership styles explain the dismal state of their response to the pandemic? Welcome to Seat of Power, Episode 6. I'm P. Renada, Rappler's Malacanang reporter. I'm speaking with Gideon Lasco, a doctor and medical anthropologist who explored medical populism in a study published recently in Global Public Health, an international journal. Gideon also writes a column for the Philippine Daily Inquirer, mostly about politics and governance. Gideon, can you explain to us what does populism mean?
Well, for me, I think populism, even though it's been an overused term, both by media and scholars, politicians, it's been overused over the past several years. But at the core of populism is really the forging of divisions. It's a divisive political style that pits the people, so in this case, the good citizens of the country, against an imagined dangerous other. It can be the establishment, for example, it can be pharmaceutical, medical elites, it can be outsiders, dangerous, infectious countries bringing in the virus. So at the heart of populism, and also medical populism, which is populism when applied to health crises, is these divisions that people forge. Populism is really a term that's been used a lot over the past several years and recent decades to describe politicians who appeal to the people. So it can be as simple as really catering to what people say. That's how it's been popularly used. Pero within the scholarly literature, there's a lot of debate about the term itself. But all of these scholars agree that populism really thrives on division. So it's all about dividing the public between the so-called people and the other, or the establishment. So there's a division that's part of populism. And another part of populism is also the making of different claims. So when you hear people like Trump claiming that there's a cure, so it's simplification of complex problems by offering easy solutions to them. But the core of populism is this divisive politics.
Okay, because when we understand populism as the way it's usually described, right, like you're saying, appealing to the people, parang taking off from the sentiments of the public, it doesn't sound like a bad thing, because actually it's a good thing when a leader wants to take the sentiments of the people, do something about it, fight abusive systems in the name of the people. But when you explain how populism becomes divisive, then that's when it becomes dangerous. Is that correct?
Yes, because the logic of populism rests on not just saying what people want to hear, but also to sustain this divisive logic of populism, you have to blame people for problems, or you have to really ascribe culpability to a certain group. For example, and when applied to health, that becomes what we call medical populism, that becomes more dangerous because you end up stigmatizing entire populations, or you blame a particular group. Oh, it's the media who's hyping this problem. It's the frontliners who want to take a day off. So it's all about division, and it's really dangerous. It doesn't help. Even though you're right that in some ways, populism can also be an expression of people's needs and what legitimate grievances from the people. that politicians try to tap into.
Okay, so you already introduced a term that you used in your research, medical populism. For our listeners, can you explain how this works? What is populism when in the context of a pandemic like what we're going through now?
Medical populism, which is a term that I developed with a sociologist, Nicole Corrado. So we define it as a style of political response to health crises that divides people and whatever other or the establishment. So that's one feature. It makes a spectacle out of a crisis. So it rests on drama, dramatic responses, dramatizing discourse, dramatic language.
Alam mo, kung hindi natin kaya itong putang inang idioto na corona ito, hinahanap ko, gusto ko sampalin ang gago. We are a nation.
So it's all about drama and spectacle, but it also involves simplifying problems. Before the pandemic, some examples include the vaccination scares, for example. So if you hear politicians say that, well, it's caused by vaccine. This measles or autism is caused by vaccine. So that's one form of how politicians simplify a medical crisis. It can also be another example as a drug war itself. So if someone like Duterte says drugs destroy the brain, so they're dramatizing the drugs issue and making it something that's a public health concern. We can also see that as a form of medical populism. And why it's particularly significant for public health crises is because public health emergencies like the pandemic require an urgent response, because people are afraid of the virus. It's understandable, because when we talk about diseases and plagues, epidemics, it really taps into our deepest fears of death and dying. No one wants to be infected. That's why medical populists can really capitalize on these concerns. People are so absolutely anxious and really anticipating what the government will do. So it's very easy for politicians to capitalize on this by offering easy solutions and dramatic responses.
Medical populism, you mentioned in your research Jair Bolsonaro and then Donald Trump and also our own president, Rodrigo Duterte, and you said they are case studies for leaders who have turned to medical populism when they handled the pandemic. And another commonality between these three leaders is that in their countries, the transmissions have gone out of control. We all obviously know that America has the highest number of COVID cases in the world. And also in Brazil, the numbers are also very high. And also in the Philippines, we are the highest in Southeast Asia. So do you think that there is a connection between their medical populism and their actual response, the effectivity of their government's response to curbing the spread in their countries?
Well, I believe that there's definitely a connection that we can make between leadership and public health crises. Because if we define medical populism as politicians resorting to easy solutions, offering false hopes, for example, like Donald Trump saying that chloroquine can be a treatment for an even UV light. I think he made this outlandish comment about how this light can kill the virus.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of lungs.
And we have Bolsonaro who's completely denying even comparing COVID-19 to just a little, saying it's just a little flu, saying that Brazilians are naturally hardy people, and he even jumps into the pool and it's okay. So all of these machismo, very simplistic kinds of explanations. Like if we remember Duterte saying, sampalin ko yung virus na yan eh. So all of these, of course, because they tend to simplify the pandemic, then it also detracts attention from the complex solutions that are required for a government to effectively respond to a pandemic, which is really a complex, not just a public health, but also a social, economic, and a political crisis. So I think that it's self-evident that this kind of response that simplifies crisis and spectacularizes crisis can be a detrimental factor to our response, and can help explain, although there are many factors, of course, but it can help explain why we have this very poor performance in terms of COVID-19.
Who would be the antithesis of these populist leaders right now? Who would you say in the whole arena of world leaders?
Yeah. So if there are medical populists, then we can say that there's also medical technocrats. So these are people who, instead of simplifying a pandemic, really acknowledges the complexity of the pandemic. Instead of spectacularizing crisis, they also acknowledge that some responses are not dramatic, but they're important as well. For example, contact tracing. It's not as dramatic as saying we have a vaccine available to say that we have a contact tracing team. But these less spectacular but no less important responses are also very crucial. So people who acknowledge the complexity, people who goes beyond spectacle, people who, instead of forging divisions and blaming WHO, blaming China, blaming different countries, blaming the media even, you have people who recognize the need to unite and rally people behind a unified response. So I think that's a characteristic that is a good in a leader in this time. And finally, instead of making outlandish knowledge claims, like saying that certain antibodies can cure COVID or offering false cures, then they respect the need for evidence. Evidence that's based in science, acknowledging also that science is evolving and it can be changing as well. So we saw how face masks changed from being recommended only for frontliners to be recommended in the public. It doesn't mean that the science was not credible, but it means that science is evolving and we need leaders to respect that. And we have seen, I think New Zealand does a good job in doing that. Taiwan also is doing it. Helped that their vice president has a background in epidemiology and they're really trying to respond based on science. They're not perfect, of course, no country is perfect, but at least we see how their attitude towards the pandemic is translating to better responses. There's certainly less people dying of the virus and less stringent measures as well.
Have you made a study or maybe made observations on how medical populism has impacted on the popularity of those leaders who use this governance style?
Yes. So that's a very good question, because of course these people are politicians and they would tend to cater to what people want to hear as well. So these offers of easy solutions like a vaccine in December also make political sense to some extent, because they satisfy people's demands for solutions and people don't necessarily appreciate complexity. So, but however, if you see Bolsonaro in Brazil, his popularity has already also suffered greatly because of his responses, which is also forcing him to correct course. The interesting thing about Bolsonaro is he really downplayed the pandemic. He kept saying it's just a little flu, it's just a little cold, and even makes these dramatic shows of going to marketplaces, bakeries, without a mask. So it's really dramatic. And if you successfully convince your voters that you're going against an establishment who's out to cripple the economy, then because of these dramatic performances, they can actually win the public through these dramatic displays. But it relies on division. So if you have someone to blame, for example, Bolsonaro is saying that look at these governors, just to score political points, they want to dramatize the crisis, they want all these lockdowns, and it's killing the economy. We have to take it like a man. We have to survive this. So all of these arguments can have an appeal. But it also means that given changing popularity, then they might potentially also be swayed to the other direction. So we have seen how Donald Trump also changed course with face masks. For a long time, he was really making fun of face masks. He was even ridiculing Joe Biden for recommending face masks. But now he's turned around and started recommending face masks as well. You have Bolsonaro, who acquired the virus himself and was isolated for some time. But interestingly, he has turned that to his advantage, but by saying, oh, look, like I said, I can survive the virus, and now it's really not so big of a deal. So it's interesting. It keeps evolving all the time. And certainly what the people think and what the people say also matter. But we have to bear in mind that the politicians, because they're very popular with their base, they can also shape people's concepts of the pandemic and turn it to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned those ayaw na mag-mask si Trump and si Bolsonaro. It's different here in the Philippines because Duterte himself, while he did downplay the gravity of COVID-19, never naman siya nagsabi na masks are bad or anything. If anything, he encourages people to wear masks and even says, if you don't wear a mask, diba, the police will catch you for violations. But what Duterte has done is pit himself against an enemy, and in the past few weeks, we've seen him do this to number one oligarchs. So yung sinasabi niyang the Ayala's MVP, Manny V. Pangilinan, and then the Lopez family who owns ABS-CBN. And then last week only, he mentioned doctors who are supposedly, allegedly, falsely saying that they want to oust him. So can you explain this tact of Duterte? Why does he do this? Why does he have to make an enemy? Is this helping him in any way?
Well, politically, it deflects blame from the government. By creating these kinds of divisions, they're able to cast themselves as the outsider or even the victim who is up against this system, and therefore people should rally behind them because they're trying to do their best despite the people out to get them. So any kind of failure can be attributed to these people if it happens that way. So in the United States, we have Donald Trump going against governors. We have Donald Trump going against the WHO and China and also the media. And in Brazil, we see Bolsonaro doing the same for state governors and health experts. I think Bolsonaro already fired two of his ministers of health. So we also see the relationship between the president and science being involved in these kinds of divisions. But at the heart of it, I think, is the political tactic of finding someone to blame for the pandemic instead of acknowledging responsibility and instead of acknowledging that they're the main people involved and they must take leadership of the pandemic response.
But then, see, Duterte, it's just puzzling for some people, including myself, why Duterte would paint doctors, like frontliners themselves, as the enemy in some cases, diba? Like, obviously, Malacanang will downplay it and say, oh no, he's not really making them the enemy. He was just speaking his frustrations out. He was expressing his anger. But still, diba? The thing is, you can't don't criticize me because it's going to look like you want to get rid of me and you want to take over and tell me what to do and you're the experts. So, do you think this is a mistake for Duterte? Because the papayan frontliners, like, how can you blame them? They're the ones you're depending on. Can he possibly get away with this?
Well, I think that what we're seeing now in those three countries is the limits of medical populism, in the sense that these divisions cannot work all the time. You cannot divide everyone. You cannot. There are some groups that are clearly beyond people's ability to follow you in this direction. So maybe media can be easily scapegoated because people don't really have an affinity to media, unfortunately. But when it comes to frontliners, you're right. They might be reaching. So in the US, Dr. Fauci as well, like Donald Trump going against these health experts, I think that they're reaching the limits and they might correct. I predict, based on this medical populism framework, I think that they will not double down on this division with frontliners. I don't think they'll do that. And the fact that Duterte, even though he grudgingly really protested the frontliners, let's bear in mind that he responded to them in that same press conference. It was in response to the frontliners. So even while grudgingly saying these things, he was actually being reactive to them in a way that's very rare for the president to be provoked. So I think it's an acknowledgement of the power of frontliners as well. So it's an interesting dynamic that we see. The paper that I wrote took into account the pandemic from March onwards until around May to June. But now there's so many things happening. The vaccine is also there, and Duterte is now offering the vaccine as an easy solution. So in a way, it also fits medical populism. But I want to go back to what you said earlier about how Duterte is a bit different from Trump and Bolsonaro, in that he's actually quite deferential to some public health advice, for example, face masks. And that might be attributed to the fact that he's really generally not averse to science. Even in the Dengvaxia scare, we can see that he largely stayed away from Acosta. Many of his supporters were trying to blame the Aquino administration for the dengue vaccine scandal, but Duterte himself largely stayed away from it, if you remember. And maybe face masks are also it might also be cultural that in Asia people are really more open to the idea of face masks, whereas in the US there's this libertarian tradition that sees all kinds of requirements as antithetical to American democracy. So you see Americans really not wearing face masks as an act of defiance, as an act of individualism. And that's something that we don't see in the Philippines much. So medical populism is not a strict set of responses. It's just a framework, but it also takes into account cultural differences, different traditions, depending on the social and political context.
Okay, last question, Gideon. So given this leader in these countries, and we have one also who's populist, do you think there's hope for the Philippines to still emerge from this crisis, despite or maybe because of our populist leader?
Yes, I think populism itself is something that we cannot call good or bad, because we can see some of its elements really playing a role in an effective response. For example, what Singapore did early on in the pandemic of distributing face masks to people. So at the time, there was no evidence. Even the government said at the time of Singapore that there's no evidence that face masks are effective in public. And yet, they distributed face masks to all households. So I think that's medical populism in the sense that it's a spectacular act. Wow, the government of Singapore, look at them, they're distributing face masks. So it's drama, but it also communicates to people that the government cares for them, and we cannot downplay the value of these things. So if the Philippines is to really reverse what's happening, then it must recognize the value of spectacle in public health. It must recognize that sometimes ideas are too complex and you really have to simplify them for the public. Hence the value of health communication and collaborating with media. But we've also seen how many of the features of the government's response has been largely destructive, from dividing the people, going after these oligarchs, shutting down a TV network in the middle of a pandemic. These acts obviously don't help. And with the recognition that that's happening, and with changing public opinion, which is, I think, very crucial to this, is whether public opinion will change one way or the other, then we might see the government taking a more technocratic approach, bringing in experts instead of dismissing their concerns, respecting science instead of offering outlandish claims on their own. So one step is identifying the government, diagnosing the government's response as populist with this framework, and also really making our opinions known, because people can change the political response. We have seen this with the frontliners being heard and the government responding to them. I think frontliners must recognize their political value as well. We cannot be differential. We have to recognize that we have to work with government, but we have to be strong in our voice and in our convictions, because they listen to us. So I don't see it as hopeless at all, but we really need to urgently communicate and be firm with the need for a more technocratic, science-based response.
When we first started this company, a lot of important people told me that I was going to fail.
And it was my girlfriend who said, why don't you try the streaming thing? Give yourself time. I broke even by like 6-7 months.
You'll never know until you try. Who knows? You could be the future of radio.
I'm Powie, host of Hustle's Inside the Industry, where we interview creative, enterprising, and passionate professionals on what it means to build a fulfilling career. For your weekly dose of inspiration, subscribe to Inside the Industry every Hustle Monday on Rattler Podcasts.
So you're saying that elements of medical populism can help in a pandemic, in the sense that it can be a better communication tool to people with a spectacle, it can impress certain things on the citizenry, but you have to combine it with technocratic and scientific-based actions. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We saw during the ECQ, when it was first initiated, that Randy David, the sociologist, called it optics of power. So these tanks, these displays of checkpoints, laptops, they're optics of power in the sense that they really make a spectacle out of it, and they try to communicate a government that's in control. But we have seen how counterproductive many of these can be. But when channeled properly, spectacle, and also when accompanied with less spectacular but no less important responses, then they can reassure the public. They can instill some form of discipline from the public, but not the kind of discipline that's punitive and top down and based on punishment and control, but based on information, based on people's understanding that there's a government that cares for them and a government that informs them why they need to do these things. That's the kind of discipline that we need. And some elements of medical populism can help, but oftentimes, as we have seen in the paper, oftentimes it's really counterproductive. That's why we must also argue against them.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gideon, so much for those insights. We're really happy to have you in our podcast. Thanks for listening to Seat of Power. I am Pia Renada. Listen to Rappler's podcasts on SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts.